challenging, of course, the possibility of change during times and not having like a specific finalized shape.
It's challenging because it's about my presence within the work and my commitment to be this host and the, you know, the person who is in a way evolving with the work and who is continuously present within the work. And I think that my tendency often is, you know, the process or the methodology of working, which involves certain research, which then finalizes on creating a visual display that brings certain elements of the research. You know, that's something that I'm always involved with, but by the time when the exhibition opens, like the exhibition, for example, at the Walker at present, you know, the opening is the dead point of my participation, and then I completely remove myself from the work. So any kind of activities that happen later are not necessarily with my direction or my participation. And in a way, you know, even the kind of negotiations, each time when Castello di Rivoli is being asked about possible meetings, you know, some bookings for the table, I'm being asked if I agree or I don't agree, which I always in principle agree. But of course, in the future, if there is a requirement to move this work into another museum, I possibly have to rethink how this work will be shown.
It is a way to reply exactly to the decontextualization, the whole relocation of the work that is like a specific starting point, but it's also on life and change. One thing that, for example, for sure is changing in the table, as you mentioned before, is also the archive material that is into the veterans that compose that is around the table.
Yeah.
And speaking about archive, in a way, I have something. I'm working also in Milan. For an archive of young Italian artists, like it is a kind of familiarity and used with archive. And sometimes archive documents, I feel like a bit to be totalitarian, to be like pretend to be true. And for example, verba volat scripta malet is like an old sentence that apparently say that what is written is for sure, and what is speech verbally should fly away and is not so stable. But actually, at the beginning, when this sentence was written, was actually referring to Jesus Christ, which lesson was more about speaking directly to people. And if the speech was powerful and productive, was making an effect, otherwise should have fly away, thanks God, in a way. So the beginning was quite the opposite. I'm like speaking about this because I know that you are referring to this aspect, because I know that your work into the archive is quite fundamental, till now, unless the exhibition in the Kunsthalle in Basel, for example, was based on, not based, but you know, one reference was Avi Barbour, and another reference was the story of like an American soldier that participated to the Vietnam War, and that you follow and start purchasing photographs that he took while he was in Vietnam, and then you decide to meet him. So all is in a way connected with archive, your personal archive, and archive of institution as the Whitechapel, or live archive that accumulate within the story of the work. So which is all your attraction into archive and written material, stable, fixed document, as a pretense or as like sample of truth?
Well, I think that, maybe it has taken me a little bit of time to actually look at all of this as some kind of need to search for the truth, because I'm specifically now working on a project which is about the truth, and it's sort of looking at various things, and I'm trying to escape from the references that are attached to art history and sort of visual culture. But I think that this more has to do with just the way how we try to memorize things. You know, like I go through periods when I'm interested in different sort of subjects and different issues. And in order to find information and to find knowledge about it, either I go to archives which store information on paper, you know, in a very traditional way, or I use our archives on the internet, such as Wikipedia. You know, this is an archive as well, which in a way, you know, we all use on a very kind of almost compulsively. Everyone sort of finds out things about people and different matters through internet. So there are archives created on internet which we use, and obviously it's not something that we collect if we don't print it out. You know, it's something that you would always have access to. But I think that for me, archiving is firstly way of collecting knowledge, and then secondly is also the way of documenting my process of thinking, and then finally documenting the works. And I think that, I mean, I don't know, this is for you or for anyone else, the archiving is just the way of living, really. It's the way of sort of trying to somehow perhaps project ourselves to the history and the context. And especially if we're having some kind of aspiration of making a mark, you know, almost the way how you collect information, how you store this information, perhaps is the way how you create your own identity. You know, so I think that archives are very much about identity of an institution or personal identity. And of course, then I guess how you use this archive is perhaps the method of working with this, you know, information, and how you respond to something that you identify with. But of course, if you're talking about archive as a totalitarian sort of tool, then of course, you know, if you go to the origin of where the word archive comes from, you know, in Greek, it was the house of Archon, which is the house of the ruler, where different sort of important papers would have been held, and, you know, it would be a nomination of what is important to be preserved and what is not important to be preserved. So that's perhaps also interesting for me, because this is how history is edited, and that's how history subjectively can be then interpreted in a very particular way by a particular source. So for example, if you were looking in sort of archives of Soviet Union about certain characters that existed and were very influential politically, but then completely deleted and removed when, you know, they became less sort of popular during especially Stalin's year, you would not find any folders or any archive on these people, because it would be all destroyed. So, you know, archive in a way accumulates information, but then if you attach this to totalitarian systems, it can be completely deleted as well. So the history might just completely disappear.
And apart from archive, I would like also to ask you about something that is very different and not linked with any totalitarian rule, but about coincidence. Because sometimes in your work, there is, of course, there's like serious research, personal research connected with a specific context, as in the case that we just mentioned, but also in other one that we will mention soon. For example, in the Kunsthalle Basel, you did an exhibition about, I was saying before, the story of this soldier that randomly, occasionally, it happens to be connected to another research that you was doing about the archive of Ali Barbour. And at the same time, your commission at the Walker Center, that is the most recent work. Now, then we will see also more detailed perspective of the actual exhibition, not just of this work, but in this tapestry, there is of course the forest, and into the forest there are many characters. In between them there is also you, as it was in the last tapestry coming from Nature of the Beast and from your experience in the Whitechapel Gallery. And as well as there is in the corner the soldier of a previous exhibition, as there were many characters connected with the story of your approach to the Old Walker Center, but also to other works of yours from the past. So I can see in this labyrinthine structure of the forest like a sort of a small retrospective, maybe it's too banal to say, but like assemblage, a sample of references that are very dealing with your present and past work. At the same time, one of the main figures in the front is like some Tea Party demonstration that became quite a crucial event into the way you wanted to analyze and to create and project your work in the Walker Art Center. And occasionally it happened to be there when there was like a demonstration that was totally like a sort of coincidence. So which rule has coincided in this specific case? And of course, as Mallarmé said, all coincidence should be guided, so nothing happened from just poor and naive coincidence.
Well, I think that in both cases with the exhibition for the Kunsthalle Basel, which was called I Am Become Death, and this exhibition, I mean, there's always an element of coincidence, because even if you think of actually looking for certain information, by chance you find stuff or you meet somebody who is guiding you through certain things, and then sometimes just happened. Something is based purely on a coincidence, like this exhibition at Kunsthalle Basel, and it was just not in any way attached with Kunsthalle Basel that I was looking at the work of German art historian Abi Warburg, and especially in regards to his trip to United States, where he went to visit Hopi tribes, and he then years later wrote a lecture on snake ritual. And I was sort of very interested in him personally, only because he represented a very particular approach to me, in, you know, somebody very specific and very unique in the way how he was collecting information and collecting knowledge. So his library has very particular structure, the way how he wrote his notes and how he even studied various things was quite eclectic and would evolve in a very unexpected manner. But anyway, the lecture on snake ritual, which was to me a very sort of particularly interesting moment of his studies and his writing, he talks about Hopis dealing with the unknown and dealing with the fear of nature and unknown, and creating sort of rituals around this sort of unknown territories, which one of them was the dance with the snakes, which was about mediating between the spirits from underground and Hopis in order to sort of send prayers for the water. And then around that time, I was collecting negatives. I was buying negatives on eBay, and I bought the archive from the Vietnam War veteran, who sold me literally about 250 negatives of photographs that he took in Vietnam. And only after receiving these images and scanning every single negative, I found an image of him with a snake in his mouth. And it was just purely by chance that, with this total kind of excitement about Abi Warburg, I bought the image from this guy who was called Tom Prippish, with him actually also. And I sort of thought, this is too much of an interesting coincidence to dismiss. So I created another year and a half of research, which included my trip to Hopi tribes following the steps of Abi Warburg. That included visit to Tom Prippish, where I spoke to him about the photographs that he sold me and why he sold it to me, and then various other things that became part of the exhibition. With the Walker Art Center, you know, the coincidence mainly that allowed me to go to the Tea Party protest was because I went there for a very short initial visit that was supposed to last for maybe 4 days or 3 days, and then the volcano erupted in Iceland, so I couldn't go back to Europe for another 2 weeks, and it happened that I stayed in Minneapolis for the duration of 2 weeks when the Tea Party happened in the sort of outside of the capital in St. Paul's. So in a way, you know, at that time, of course, I sort of very much considered that it was an interesting coincidence, but I wasn't quite sure how this coincidence would form the work at the end. And only after a period of sort of finding out about various moments of history of the Walker Art Center, and discovering that the focus of the worker was very much about mediation, you know, opening up kind of a space for the public to participate, to the extent that when the Walker Art Center was extended with Herzog and de Meuron building a really big kind of additional part of the Walker, the kind of campaign that was used by the director of the Walker Art Center was that what they were trying to do, they were trying to create a feeling of town square, which basically meant that they were trying to bring the idea of town square into the museum. And then it was interesting for me to compare what was happening on Town Square, which was the Tea Party protests, in the very current, you know, current sort of situation, and that particular event when I was there. And I mean, you know, the whole thing has been carrying on since 2009. And as probably everybody knows, the Tea Party is quite an interesting phenomena, that it's something that cannot be dismissed, and it's really, in a way, influencing politics. So, you know, so that was the negotiation, that was maybe more opening up a question how the institution can really mediate the idea of town square. So it partly happened by a coincidence, but it was also deeply rooted in the history of the Walker, and that was the message that was being sent through various publications and various campaigns of the Walker since its foundation in the 20s.
Also, the title, in a way, referred to like a campaign of the Walker.
Well, you see, the title comes
from within.
Yeah, the title comes from a brochure which was, I think, published in the 30s during the Great Depression, where the government was trying to create sort of different schemes for people to earn, you know, for the artists to earn money. And in this sort of publication, which was, I think this possibly was written by the director at the time called Daniel Deffenbacher. And it basically starts with, remember France, it broke from within, that can happen here. We can only protect our own country within by making more of us, more understanding of each other's freedom and each other's work and possessions. We must learn to place a high value on things that we have created and built, and which we would inevitably lose through this unity and social revolution. So basically it was saying that if the institution doesn't educate people in the way how they express themselves, it can create a situation where revolution might happen, that it's not necessarily following, you know, what is kind of welcome and what, and in a way, I mean, you know, Noam Chomsky, when he related to the Tea Party, you know, was saying something very similar, because he was saying that everybody has got the right to, in a way, express their dissatisfaction with the government, but it's not maybe so much about that it's this dissatisfaction and unhappiness that is being expressed, is that it's not being managed properly. So his commentary were very much about unmanaged protests that are not really giving the right message. And I guess here what is being said, that, you know, you also should manage how people express their unhappiness and dissatisfaction too. So in a way, you know, this whole thing is quite political, and what we are seeing here, which is, you know, this kind of, the element of the tapestry, which is a metaphor for the history, and in a way a forest where you create layers of history, you sort of collage different characters that represent different periods, including the present time. Then you have the architectural structure, which in a way is criticizing this attempt of Herzog and de Meuron trying to create a town square situation. And then you have another narrative which is based purely on the works in the collection of the Walker, which are then often of also dealing with my own personal practice and this kind of idea of using other people's work and issues of authorship, which I'm exploring through the use of Sherry Levine's work, Duchamp, and sort of other people. So in a way, there are various narratives within that work, which certainly will not be able to be translated, for example, in the exhibition at Basel of the tapestry by its own. And these two images, the one with the yellow dots is an image by, it's a work by Cheryl Levine called The Knot Painting. I mean, the thing that is very interesting to mention, which we haven't mentioned yet, about the whole show at the Walker. The Walker Art Center was initially founded by Walker, who has made his fortune on lumbering industry, cutting forest, basically, cutting Native American forest. And there's another work which I haven't got a photograph of, which was commissioned by the Walker's family, and Bernice Abbott, who had to go to the forest, which was lumbered by the Walker's company, and create photographs that were very much glorifying the industry. And within the whole kind of series of photographs which I found in the archive, of, well, not archive, perhaps the collection of the Walker, there was one image of a woman working in the factory and cutting out knots from plywood, which is exactly cutting out the shapes. Then at the same time, I found this image of Cheryl Levine, which is in the collection of the Walker, which is called the Knot Painting, where rather than cutting the shapes and filling them with something else, she paints over. And I'm not sure if she was aware that there was a photograph like this taken by Bernice Abbott in regards to the Walker. But, you know, lots of these associations, which are associations through certain kind of symbolic or also just visual associations, which I have made between the works, took me through sort of various things, like, you know, here, I mean, having association of Cheryl Levine's work with Duchamp is very important because she has made various references to other people's work, and she's using other people, like this is a remake of, again, Duchamp's urinal, made in, I think, probably porcelain or gilded, I can't even remember what the medium is. But in a way, this discussion or this negotiation between the work of Duchamp, you know, and the ready-made, the whole kind of idea of ready-made, the work of Cheryl Levine is something that is very close to my practice. So in a way, there are different narratives going through this exhibition and through different aspects of objects and works that I have used there.
And also in this exhibition, actually, as in the one that we saw before, there is still the possibility of sitting down and to have, like, not meeting in a way, but just like spaces where to...
People can interact in a way with the work, but there isn't really any program, you know, it's a very free way of sort of being able to perhaps use the work in a different way than you just use an image on the wall. But it doesn't have any expectation to create anything, you know, there's nothing that I'm expecting to happen after this exhibition ends, you know, it's just a space, basically, that is designed for a certain purpose.
And actually, the design of this space, of this platform, of this place for seat, is referring to a project of
Herzog and Meuron. Well, this was one of the launches that they designed, which initially was supposed to be based literally outside of this gallery. And they never actually built this this launch, because I think that for various reasons, I would think possibly health and safety. You know, these recessed areas were very dangerous. And, you know, this is something that we had to negotiate quite a lot as well, because there are various places where, you know, where people are being obliged to be quite careful and look after themselves. Like, for example, in Switzerland, if you build a piece of work which can be potentially dangerous to the public, you put a note saying that it's your responsibility to look after yourself, and people do. And in the United States, probably, or Great Britain, if someone falls into this recess, you know, I potentially can be sued for that, as well as the institution. So I think that possibly for that reason, Herzog and the Meuron never materialized it. But I quite like the idea of sort of materializing the idea and trying to kind of think of this as, you know, some kind of monument to the town, dedicated to town square dynamic, you know, where you sort of can sit down, where you can be elevated, walk up, you know, when you can kind of function within the gallery space in a very different dynamic.
It is a commission that takes you probably more than 1 year to develop, and you go several times to Minneapolis. Did you